Tour podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's first internet radio station dedicated to startups and tech companies. Wherever you're watching this or listening to this, make sure to hit the like and subscribe button. This time, I do have a follow-up interview because back in the days in 2017, I did the world premiere, the first English interview of a newly founded all-digital health insurer called Otonova. And since we have a lot to talk, so this episode is running a little bit longer than usual, more than 40 minutes. So guys, get a snack and get a beverage and enjoy the interview. This time I have the founder here after approximately 4 years to do a follow-up. Hey, Roman, how are you doing?
I'm great and I'm happy to be here to follow up with this his story from 4 years ago.
Well, I vividly remember that I said, hey, let's do next year follow-up. Well, it took 4 years, but nonetheless, we made a follow-up, kept the promise. So that's totally fine.
Yeah, and that is typical for health insurance or insurance as an industry. Things take a bit longer than in other industries, even when we do startup. Yeah.
I'm totally sure we get to talk about this. First, we want to make one thing clear. You're not an insurtech company. You are a fully licensed health insurance company, meaning you take the risk on your own books and you're not an insurance broker or something, right?
Absolutely. We're a full stack insurer and we have digitized everything from acquisition to all the customer experience while you are on board, you know, and everything is digital. So in that respect, we are an insurtech. But if you compare us with other insurtechs who just take a specific part of the value chain, yes, we are a full stack health insurer with a license, with a insurance and reinsurance license for Europe.
Mm-hmm. Insurance and reinsurance, we may add that insurance is a risk management business. There are specially qualified people who study insurance mathematics and then they try to minimize the risk. But nonetheless, all the insurers have to do some type of reinsurance. And at those reinsurance companies, the risk gets even more diversified across different insurance companies. Is this approximately correct?
That is absolutely correct. So the interesting thing is that we ourselves are reinsured for catastrophic risk in our pool of lives. But we are also have a reinsurance license ourselves. So, and I'm going to can talk about this later on. When we work in corporations and we do a white label cooperation with another player, they can have the risk in their books and we can take a reinsure out, we can reinsure that risk. And so basically, in that case, you basically parcel out the business and, you know, every side takes 50% or another percentage. And that's a way to use reinsurance also for white label business and insurance.
Before we get into the real interview, I would be curious, what would be a catastrophic risk for what you are reinsured?
Yeah, a typical case would be that somebody is insured with us and and the person gets a baby and the baby has an extremely expensive rare disease. So if somebody has an extremely expensive rare disease and once is knocking at our door, we have, you know, we can actually deny this person to enter the health insurance. So we check the risk, but with people who are born into our health insurance, so basically people who are born as kids of our insured persons, they have the right to enter the health insurance right away. So in this case, you know, it could be a disease, a rare disease that will cost the insurance 200,000 euros a year. And for that risk, we are insured. So from a specific amount per year, per person, we insure that risk with a reinsurer. Now, That happens very rarely, obviously, but if it would happen, it would not be good for our risk pool. And so that's why we reinsure it. If you're big enough as a health insurance and we're getting there, then you need less and less reinsurance because you basically, the whole pool will basically take care of the risk.
And this reinsurance actually then is charged, I assume, until this kid is growing up. And then there are different regulations, how much you earn, what insurance you're going to take, and so on and so forth. But in Germany, you have to have some type of health insurance required by law, right?
Yeah. So basically, our insured persons have the health insurance with us, and we reinsure a specific small part. So if one person gets above a specific threshold of cost per year, we can then get that money back from the reinsurer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. Fascinating stuff. Never dealt with it on Startup Rate that I owe before. But we're already deep in discussing what Autonova is. But let us first get you get a little bit you personally introduced to our audience. As always, your LinkedIn profile is down here in the show notes, and people can reach out to you directly. If they are looking for insurance, they would be better off looking at the company website. Of course, we also provide a link to there. And I saw you have a totally fascinating CV because you have been a platoon leader in the German army. Then you went on to study medicine, you were MD and a PhD in medicine. Then you became a consultant with the guys like BBDO, A.T. Kearney and McKinsey. And then you founded a startup. Can you take us along this fascinating journey?
Absolutely. Well, when I finished high school in Germany, there was still the draft. So I decided instead of being bored in the army, I would take a bit longer route to become an officer of the reserve. And at the end of that, I was a platoon leader in the mountaineers. So at least I was doing ski tours in the mountains and fun things in the mountains while I was in the army.
One question, are you still skiing?
Absolutely, I'm still skiing. And during the COVID times, I took up cross-country skiing because lifts were closed, you know, and ski touring and cross-country skiing, I still love that. Yeah. If you live in Munich like I do, it's one of the classical things to do in the wintertime. Yeah. Yeah. And what I did learn, apart from skiing and ski touring, what I did learn in the army was to lead. And that is obviously something that if you do a startup and are a CEO, it's something that is important for you. I didn't need it in the time in between too much. But it came in handy when I started this startup. After my time in the army, I studied medicine. Really loved that. Was totally engulfed in medicine, like everybody is, because it's the most fascinating topic that you can study, I would argue. Even having studied with an economics afterwards with an MBA, I loved it. But I still felt maybe there's something else in life. So I did an internship at McKinsey, and I loved that even more. And the core of my change in career afterwards was really the reason was that I personally love to do new things. Innovation is my thing, and new things. And you're a great physician if you've done the same thing over and over again. Couple of thousand times. I mean, that's the physicians that I would look out for if I have a problem.
That's a medical practitioner. You practice, you repeat, and you get better and better and better, right?
And this is not the perfect profile for a person like me, who wants to do new things discover new things and do this discovery journey. And so that's much better in consulting because you get a new project all the time, right? And so you keep on learning. So I did a lot of consulting, learned a little about the healthcare system because I only consulted in healthcare being a physician. And in the course of that, I started my first startup. After that, what I've learned in consulting, then I said, there's something we need to have better service in Germany. And I started a demand and disease management company, basically a service company who does the medical service for health insurance. And we were like really pioneering this space in Germany, and basically had many of the leading insurers as customers. And the company still exists in the new economy. We were quickly hyped and prepared an IPO, which we scrapped at the end of the new economy and quickly sold the pieces to Germany's largest private payer at the time, to DKV, which is part of the Munich Re Group. I stayed there for 2 more years and learned a lot about how private health insurance works, but also learned that I didn't really like it. Didn't like the way it worked at the time. And so I left again, and I felt, what is it that I really need to do next in my life? And many people were reaching out. And one offer that I had was from BBDO Consulting, which is really a branding agency or a marketing agency that wanted to basically build up their own consulting business. And for me, that was the great chance to learn a lot more about marketing and sales and branding. Because I realized in my first startup that this is the most important part. You can, you know, invent and come up with a good idea, but if you can't market it, if you can't sell it, if you can't make it interesting for other parties, then you're not going to be successful. So I spent 2 years with BBDO as a partner for their consulting practice. But really, I helped them grow the business. But at the same time, I learned a lot. I learned from my direct reports, who were much smarter than me in branding and in marketing and sales. Obviously, I was much more experienced in healthcare. So it was a good mixture, I learned a lot. But in the end, I'm an entrepreneur, and I don't want to work in somebody else's company. So I started my own consulting company and. Ran that for 10 years, looking for the next big thing that I could do. In the process, even organizing my own conference, which was called Innovations and Investments in Healthcare. I had great speakers from the US coming over there to Berlin, in the Adlon Hotel and in the Soho House. We did the conference, and it was great fun. And I stayed on top of the latest development that way. Otherwise, you know, I might have been, you know, buried deep down in work for pharma companies, which was, you know, good financially, but doesn't give you, you know, the insight for the next startup to do. So I also worked for some big startups who are doing big rounds now in healthcare, which I can still cannot name. But so I was there in the space, and I came up with the idea for Autonova to start a German digital health insurance, much like Oscar was at the time in the US. That was also my advantage, that the investors knew Oscar and knew it was a success case.
Several questions here. One would be, it's more than just a copycat of Oscar. And secondly, what was your importance, your personal value of Oscar? How did you perceive them, and how important was it for you? As you said, the investors already knew them. Was this crucial to success of Oscar for Autonova?
Yeah, and I didn't need Oscar for the idea, to be quite frank. So basically, I had the idea and built that up, and then I realized there's something in the US that is much bigger than that. So I had thought about this for a long time, because I was a frustrated innovators selling the innovations to health insurances. And so I had learned that you need to be the health insurance itself to be really innovative. It's pretty much like, you know, in the computer space, where Apple said you need to have the software and the hardware to be really innovative. And the same experience was true for me in health insurance. You need to have the services, plus you need to have the relationship to the insured person. Otherwise, you can't really be 100% innovative. So I was looking for the opportunity. And then when in my consultancy, you know, I had the advantage of, you know, using some of my consultants on the side to prepare this project. And we built up an idea that was pretty close to what Autonova is today. And then we saw that there was, on the other side of the ocean, Oscar, and there were big success. And with knowing that, you know, then while I worked for another startup trying to get financing for them, some of the big investors in Germany were asking me, you know, can't we do something like Oscar in Germany? And I said, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do have a plan here in my pocket and I'm preparing that plan. And so it was a very lucky coincidence for me. And I do think that without having Oscar on the other side of the ocean, it would have been much more difficult to start Autonova, if not impossible. So I'm very grateful to Oscar for being there and for being a success story that investors could see that there is a value in creating a health insurance.
I see. And what was the moment you actually decided, okay, now it is time? And I'm wondering how long it actually took you from like doing the first step, okay, now I'm going to launch this company, until you had the final license of the BaFin, meaning the German oversight body for all things financial. They oversee the banks as well as the insurance companies. And if you want to provide insurance, you have to be licensed by them.
In the beginning of 2015, my now largest investor, Holzbrinck Venture, Christoph Jung, came into my office with an idea that he wanted to check. And I told him it's never going to fly. He was kind of frustrated and said, but healthcare is so big, you know, but there must be something. And I said to him, you know, if you have balls, you're going to start your own health insurance. And then you can actually push all these levers. And from that moment on, he was set on fire. And we were talking all through the year 2015 about this idea and pushing it further and building it. And in the summer of 2015, we were basically looking for a management team. And I was interviewing some people, you know, who had come back from some other rocket ventures and were basically, you know, not firm in health insurance and healthcare. And at the end of the summer, I told to Christoph, I said, you know, I think it's still a great idea, but the management that we're seeing here is not going to be the management that you need. You need somebody who understands insurance, who understands healthcare, who has an entrepreneur's mindset, you know, to have all these points in one person was really difficult to find. And as I have a very big ego, or relatively big ego, I said, well, the only person I know worldwide who ticks all the boxes, that's actually me, you know. And so we basically said, you know, okay, I probably will have to let my consultancy run by itself and leave the company to do that. And so in the fall of 2015, I was looking for two co-founders, as my investor said, well, you know, it's cool, you know, you're 52. I think it was 52 at the time. You're 52. And that's not the typical startup age, really. You know, they said, well, you know, that's why I'm ticking all the boxes, you know, because I have all that experience. And they said, but we still need a great CTO, you know, who's worked at Rocket, and we need a great guy for design and for the product. And I said, you know, what's, you know, where do you think this person should come from? And I said, well, you know, Wunderlist was just sold, you know, maybe if you can get the designer of Wunderlist, that would be great. And I said, okay, so Rocket, Wunderlist, get it. So we went out there with my consulting team and talked to great candidates in the market. And I went to Berlin and met them. And They saw right away what a great opportunity this was. And so Frank Bötzle from Rocket and Sebastian Scherer from Wunderlist basically said, you know, they're going to participate. They were becoming my co-founders. And in December of 2015, so at the end of the year, beginning of the year, the idea started. At the end of the year, we started the company. I think the financing round, the first financing round with Holzbrinck Ventures, the final stop was basically the 23rd of December at midnight. So everybody wanted to get home for Christmas. And so we got the last points cleared out of the way. And so started the company. Officially, it always says, you know, the company was started in 2015, but operations really started in January of 2016. Obviously, and then my consultancy, you know, I made my best consultants. I made them co-CEOs of the company and let them run it. Later on, a couple of years later, I sold the consultancy to a larger consultancy, which made sense because basically I was not there anymore to procure the sales, you know, and then they were lacking critical mass in some ways. And so we sold, in the end, I sold off the consultancy, but a couple of years later. So we started the company in 2016 in the January, and we wouldn't have started it if I hadn't talked to BaFin, the regulatory agency in Germany, at the end of 2015, and, you know, said, you know, is there a chance that you will let me through? And they said, well, yes, we actually would welcome a new entrant into the market. We can't let too many companies in because obviously, if you are a private health insurance in Germany, you live forever because they don't want you to go broke. And, because you have the savings more or less of your insured persons because they pay more when they're young and we use that money to pay their bills when they're old. But we need innovation from time to time. So every, you know, 20 years roughly, or 17 years in our case, they will let a new entrant into the market, you know, to get some competition. I said, it's certainly time now because digitization is coming, you know, we have to do something about that. And so they let us enter the market, also asked us to have a structure where we could also sell some of our services to other health insurers, and which we have is like our B2B leg of the business. And from starting in 2016 in January, it took us 1.5 years until 21st of June of 2017 when we could launch the company. We never knew, you know, when we would get the license, you know, because they always said, you know, when everything is perfect, you know, we will give you the license, but we still need A, B, C, and D. So over time, we built up our system, we built up the company, and you have to imagine it. It's a little bit like if you have an ocean liner sitting in the harbor of Hamburg, and they will give you the license to get patients to deliver passengers across the ocean, but they will check your ocean liner. They will enter the restaurant and they will try to taste the menu and they will see how the machines are working. And when all of this is working, they will allow you to
sell the first ticket. Look at the screws. If they're tight, yes, I know.
Right. And that's how they work. And it's understandable because they are protecting the customers in the end. But it does mean that you have to front a lot of money. We had to front 40 million euro, basically. We had to get 40 million euros from the from our investors before we were able to launch the company. You know, then we needed some money afterwards. Currently, the BaFin is getting even stricter. They say we have seen that, you know, even when we, you know, see the first business plan, that, you know, later on the startups always find out that they will need more money in the after all. I think, you know, every startup knows this feeling, you know.
Yes. Every startup knows this. Oh, we could use a little bit more money here and a little bit more money there. Maybe one or two employees here in sales and marketing, and that kind of adds up over time.
Yeah, investors do know that, and they, you know, they're professional investors, and so they, you know, have consecutive rounds and everything. The BaFin is more the mindset of, you know, we want to have it financed through. It's actually even harder now to start an insurance or insurtech in Germany than it was at the time when we started. So we were lucky in that respect.
Mm-hmm. When I was looking at your profile on Crunchbase, I saw that you're currently on Series D and raised a total approximately 85 million euros. And you hinted, well, it's not mostly up to date, but it's approximately right.
Yeah, I think in the meantime, we have raised a little bit more. We don't always report all the financing rounds right away. Basically it's not the most important thing for us to report. Oh, now we've done another financing round. So we report them from time to time. And so usually if you look at Crunchbase, I think it's correct to say that we usually have raised a little bit more money than you can see at Crunchbase. But over time, it will correct. Yeah.
Over time, it will correct. That's great. And now we talked through how you started up. Where you're at right now, approximately 3 to 4 years after the start of Autonova. What of your assumption of running this business turned out to be true? And what turned out to be wrong?
Let me start out with what assumption turned out to be. Oh, yeah. Well, I think there's like one assumption that turned out to be true, one that turned out to be wrong, and another one that what we learned about it. So what turned out to be true was the assumption that people, you know, in our case, between the age of 30 and 35, who are making this lifetime decision for health insurance, they want an experience like they have at Amazon and at Apple. This is something they want. They don't find this at the current health insurers. And
we may add for our audience here that usually you're insured by what we call gesetzliche Krankenversicherung. It's the legal insurance company. So there are insurance companies out there that just have to take you if you have an income or no income, and you pass a certain threshold, or when you're an entrepreneur, or when you work independently freelancing stuff like this, there are certain rules when you can get private insurance. But usually if you're working somewhere, you have to pass over a certain amount, a certain threshold, a certain time in order just to qualify for private health insurance. That's why you're talking about 30 to 35.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's the reason why. And this is the age bracket in which we are getting our new lives and which we are addressing. And we were right about this, and we were right about this, that a digital product where we can get a lot of support and real-time information to the insured person will create that great customer experience. And, you know, I can tell you now that we have a net promoter score of 70, while the industry average is 14. So we are like far above the crowd. And really on par with Apple and Amazon. So that is something that turned out to be true. And we were right about that. We made an initial mistake that we could correct over time. And that initial mistake, there's an old saying in industry that in the insurance industry that says, insurance is sold, not bought. And we basically, meaning that nobody wakes up in the morning and says, you know, today I'm going to buy health insurance. That this is the reason why there is a very good business for brokers who make a lot of money on, you know, visiting you at your home and basically telling you where to sign which kind of paper.
Actually, if I would have not been working during my national service in the medical field as an EMT, I would have never thought about health insurance. I think that's a topic you're talking about, because I had a new job, I was passing the threshold, and I was looking at private health insurance. And actually, it's I do believe it's not that frequently that somebody really realizes, oh, I could do that. Well, let's work out the details. Let's look for the best health insurance company out there.
Right? Absolutely. And that's why initial idea was we will start and only sell in the direct channel, and we were not going to have any commissions in the tariff. And because of that, we will not be listed at comparison websites like Check24 in Germany. But we don't care, because we have the best tariff, and people will find out about it and will love it. And the good news is that even the great company Lemonade from the US made the same mistake when launching in Germany. Did the same thing, and they didn't sell too much. We didn't sell too much, because a typical German will go on the Check24 comparison website and will see whether the tariff that you're trying to sell him actually how it compares to others. And Check24 will only let you on there if you pay them a commission and if they can sell your product. And so what we learned is we're not strong enough. Our brand is not strong enough in the beginning, just because we have the superior product. We also have to have superior sales. And That's why we added commissions into our tariffs. We listed on the comparison websites. We added ProSiebenSat.1 Group as an investor and got a media for equity package there so that we could increase the strength of our brand via TV advertisements. And with that, we actually started growing very strongly. So that was the mistake that we made, was just purely focus on the direct channel. We still have a very good business on the direct channel, especially in the full health insurance. In the supplemental health insurance, we sell a lot about that lot through partner websites. And the latest development on that in that area was that we also started now with what I was talking about at the beginning about with white label corporations, where we have partners, sales partners who are basically selling the tariff under their own name. And they're very happy that, you know, they have a great tariff with a great customer experience with the best net promoter score in the market. And we're basically sharing the income from this tariff. And that way, we have many more avenues to the market and many more sales channels. And that is bringing us a strong growth in the market. We're still in the direct channel. We're still very transparent and we're still using that, but we had to adapt to the German market specificities. And that has actually worked very well for us.
I also want to add that what you're referring to tariffs is actually, Americans would refer to it as insurance plans. And I think just a few American listeners just said, oh, yeah. So we have to bridge the
Especially if you compare us to the US market, the strange thing in Germany is, or the different thing is that once you make a choice for a health plan, you usually stay there for life. It makes sense. The first few years you can still switch if you're not happy with the with your customer experience, but after a certain period of time, I would say roughly 7 years. It's just economically not a good idea to switch, because you build reserves at your health plan and you lose them when you switch. That's a specific thing in Germany. That's why we have a very big customer lifetime value. And when I was still a consultant, I also worked for a company who sold risk life insurance, which is not a big product, but it's a good product, additional product to have, but not a good product in itself. And they bought the traffic very dearly, and then they had a very small customer lifetime value that didn't make any sense. While for us, we have a very high customer lifetime value, and even with a relatively high customer acquisition cost, our ratio, you know, of lifetime value to customer acquisition cost is much better than all the other businesses that I know. So health insurance is a business that lends itself much better to actually to direct selling. Nevertheless, you need the trust factor in the market. You need to build up your brand, and you need to have sales partnerships with other partners in the market who can actually get that trust across. You know, and that's why we're even working together with broker groups, because they can actually tell the person that is interested in our tariff, our health plan, yes, Autonova is a good company, you will be happy with them. And that is important for us. That's what we learned.
Even though you're insured by your oversight, your insurance, everything is regulated by BaFin, people still need this branding aspect. I was curious, what are your two questions? First, you said you got a media deal from ProSiebenSat.1, their private TV station based in Munich down there. They run some of the privately owned TV stations here in Germany, some of the bigger ones. And personally, I experienced that I watch less and less and less linear TV, as it is called, since I do have the usual streaming apps on my TV. So one question would be, how did you also see, not like in terms of numbers, but like in, did you also see a decline of the importance of TV as a marketing channel here in Germany?
That was the surprising thing for myself, because at the beginning of the Autonova voyage, I was even quoted saying, you know, we're not going to do TV commercials, you know, we are going to be on Facebook, Google, whatever. The answer, as what we've learned, is you need to do both, simply spoken. And the power of TV is still much bigger than we all think. So, especially, by the way, during COVID times, everybody was watching TV, linear TV. Now, personally, I'm like you. I would say, you know, well, I have Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney at home, so you know, I'm not going to watch free TV. I did watch free TV yesterday night, obviously for the Euro Cup,
yeah.
Cup, but so this is the thing that we say, you know, I'm not going to watch free TV, but then I do watch free TV there and there. And yeah, and there are still, especially the young people, it's fascinating to me also. There are some specific, and you know, you can obviously, you don't go for every kind of show, but there are some shows that still have a very good viewership in the 30 to 35 years bracket. And also good people with good buying power. And it is. So we're all thinking in the future. We're saying, you know, like in 10 years, nobody's going to watch television anymore. As of today, people still are, and it's a great branding instrument, and it still works much better than most of us that we are kind of living in the future still believe. That was one of my learnings, you know. And obviously, you have to couple that. You know, it's like it's not enough to be on TV. You have to be on Instagram as well. But the mix, basically, you have to be on different channels, and you have to mix it. And so my surprise was how good TV is actually working. Yeah.
Admittedly, I've seen some ads for Autonova just digital, like talking about Facebook, Google Ads and stuff like this. But you've never reached me on TV personally.
Sorry, YouTube is a good channel for us, you know, So like one, you know, there you could see the same ad on television or, you know, a variation of the ad on YouTube. And so you mix. I think that's the real secret. But I was surprised myself. I came in with the same mentality of, you know, television is over and why do we do this at all? But it did make a lot of sense for us. And during COVID times, it was spectacular.
Talking about COVID, one of the questions I meant to ask you was, how did Corona impacted you? I assume you're an all digital health insurance company. Have you been prepared to work all remote? And did you also see a change in the behavior of your, let's say, potential customers and customers?
Yeah. So there's like different parts of COVID that that changed. So one thing was we were, after 2 weeks, we were all remote. You know, that was easy for us. You know, it's easy when you start a new company and you're doing video conferences anyway, and you have Zoom installed and everybody has a laptop. I mean, so it was much easier for us than for the incumbent companies, obviously. But I think that's probably true for all the startups. The other thing is, what does it do to the business? So for the business, it was, on one hand, it was actually good for us because, you know, digitization was getting into, it was basically accelerated across all the different areas. And it was much more normal to buy something online, even health insurance, than it was before. And our competition couldn't even go and come and visit people in their homes. There's a little effect for the first few months when basically the financing dried up and everybody was afraid, you know, and that was kind of bad for us. We didn't like that. But then after a couple of months, everybody saw, okay, this is going to be over in some time. And also that we are actually profiting in some ways from it. I wouldn't want to say that really profit, but that it was helpful for us. People saw the importance of health insurance. What you learned in your job as in the ER department, people saw that was important. People realized they could do anything with their mobile phone, you know, and digitally, And people were willing and interested in some things that we had pioneered in Germany, like telehealth, you know. But as everything in life, there's always a balance. As I told you before, we need this trust. It's very important for us. And when people are worried about the future, the trust factor is a little bit of a problem. So we saw whenever there was a strict lockdown that business was a bit slower than usual. But the moment that the lockdown was then released, business was even better than before. So it was in general, you know, to be a complicated answer, in general, it was helpful for us. And it helped us our positioning as well. The strict lockdown itself, you know, those weeks of the strict lockdown were something where our sales numbers wouldn't go up as much as in the rest of the year.
That we are running already a little bit longer than the usual interview, as we said before, but nonetheless, I find this interview fascinating. And there's just one more question on my usual repertoire that I have to ask. Are you guys open to talk to potential new investors?
Sorry, are we guys open to talk to potential
new investors?
Yes, I think. Yeah, the short answer is yes. which startup is not? We are moving now from the venture capital area to the growth equity area. And towards the end of the year, we will start some new talks. For us, raising, you know, we have the ability to deploy large amounts of capital because we basically buy the customers upfront, you know, and monetize them over a long period of time. And there are some ways, it's a very safe cash flow that we're generating. And it will, there's the possibility to deploy large capital, large amounts of capital, but it's not necessary. So we are actually at a very good juncture right now. And so we're talking to different groups. We will be talking at the end of the year to different groups. I think we will probably be able to get to the next level of growth through that. We are open to talking to new investors, especially from the growth equity scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, only thing left for me to say right now would be best of luck for your new adventures. And hopefully we catch up, let's say, in 4 years again.
Absolutely, Joe. And I hope I can tell you many interesting things in those 4 years again.
Looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is startuprad.eu, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to startuprad.eu podcast or check for the startuprad.eu internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the startuprad.eu skill as well.